Spokane Civic Theater is, for most people, the place you go and walk in and buy your ticket and go see a show and go home. And it is certainly that, but it is so much more in its approximately 75-year history in this community, including the nurturing of theater in oh so many ways. And so we're going to find out another way that happens, beginning with Kearney Jordan. Hello, Kearney.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
You're the education director or some such title.
Yes. Yeah.
And under that, it encompasses something you call the academy. Isn't that kind of a good term that you use year-round for many different projects?
Absolutely. The Academy program has after-school classes and audition-based productions, various training workshops from, audition skills, vocal training, improv. So just trying to give a well-rounded experience to kids that want to learn all the fun things of theater.
And among the many things you do in training, you're doing a class this semester, this fall, in radio drama. What made you pick that?
I have had a lot of fun as an adult doing radio play, so I definitely wanted to give that genre to the kids just because I've seen so many kids interested in podcasts and things, so just kind of teaching them where that almost originated from. And then also, I chose War of the Worlds just because the timing worked really well. And if you're going to go into it big. And, Orson Welles made an iconic piece that I think is kind of timeless.
Absolutely. It certainly is. And we'll get into some of that. And Amelia Payne, known as Millie in the theatrical community. Good morning, Millie.
Hi, good morning.
And you're a busy young woman doing a lot of theatrical things, a lot of plays. What made you sign up for this radio drama thing?
I've always been interested in radio plays. I've done a couple with Civic before. I did It's a Wonderful
She's
Life.
She's fine.
But I didn't see an opportunity to, continue doing that. So when I saw this come up, I thought it was, again, really interesting. And, the timing worked out, and I thought it'd be really fun because I'd been reading a little bit about Orson Welles, and I don't know, I thought it'd be fun to try out and see how it went, get some experience.
Sure. And so, and you, who is a very experienced actor, you've been in a lot of shows in a lot of different capacities and done a bit of radio drama before. Were there some new things or some things that interested or surprised you in this genre of radio drama as you guys got into it?
I think a lot of the emotions are heightened, and the sound effects really add to that. I was having fun listening to those and listening to the original recording, see how that kind of worked. It's really about putting a story together and, the realism of it. It's so immersive. And when I was younger, I didn't really realize that you could create a whole world with just your words. And so as I'm reading this piece, I really got into it and tried to imagine what it was like and really visualize it.
Nice. And back to you, Kearney. You had a whole group of kids. How many in this class?
Ten
kids in this class,
mm-hmm.
And they all needed to have good involvement and parts in this radio drama. So is there some flexibility in the script of how many readers you have and things like that that you can work through?
Yes, you can double up a certain amount of characters just because, especially with the Academy, we want to make sure that it is a fairly, equal experience for all of the students. So there's not one student with only two lines and one with 82 lines.
Sure.
And then just giving them the chance to do different characters and use different emotions and inflections and voices. But yes, 10 is a good number for this. I think something that is always interesting, but was fun for this particular one, is we have 3 boys and 7 girls. And then in the original production of this, it was all male, which for 1938 is not unheard of. But just seeing that kind of difference where we are 80 years later, and they're, you know,
including teens. Women in the military.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of fun for some of them at auditions to be like, can I read this part? I was like, absolutely you can. Can a 16-year-old girl be Orson Welles? Absolutely.
And we'll get to that part of it in a minute. But let's think of the whole cast as we're going to hear some of the recording that you folks did. By the way, I'm speaking with folks from Civic Theater, and there is going to be a live performance, a staged, if you will, radio drama performance, which is going to be next Thursday. That's a week after Halloween, November 7th at 5 o'clock there on the main stage. So we'll mention that a few times. But here is, speaking of women in the military, here is that time kind of near the end of the real action of the invasion and the attempts at repelling that invasion, as recorded by the kids in this class at Spokane Civic Theater.
Here's a bulletin from Winston Field, Long Island. Fleet of army bombers carrying heavy explosives flying north in pursuit of enemy. Scouting planes act as guides. They keep speeding enemy in sight. Just a moment, please, ladies and gentlemen. We've run special wires to the artillery line in adjacent villages to give you direct reports in the zone of the advancing enemy. First, we take you to the battery of the 22nd Field Artillery, located in the Wachung Mountains.
Range, 32 meters.
32 meters.
Projection, 39 degrees.
39 degrees.
Fire.
140 yards to the right, sir.
Shift range, 31 meters.
31 meters.
Projection, 37 degrees.
37 degrees.
Fire!
A hit, sir. We got the tripod of one of them. They've stopped. The others are trying to repair it.
Quick, get the range. Shift 50, 30 meters.
30 meters.
Projection, 27 degrees.
27 degrees.
Fire.
Can't see the shell land, sir. They're laying off a smoke.
What is it?
A black smoke, sir. Moving this way. Lying close to the ground. It's moving fast.
Put on gas masks. Get ready to fire. Shift to 24 meters.
24 meters.
Projection, 24 degrees.
24 degrees.
Fire.
Still can't see, sir. The smoke's coming nearer.
Get the range.
23 meters.
23 meters.
23 meters.
Projection, 22 degrees.
22 degrees.
Army bombing plane, V-843 off Bayonne, New Jersey. Lieutenant Vogt commanding 8 bombers, reporting to Commander Fairfax Langham Field. This is Vogt reporting to Commander Fairfax Langham Field. Enemy tripod machines now in sight. Reinforced by 3 machines from the Morristown Cylinder. 6 altogether. 1 machine partially crippled. Believed hit by a shell from Army gun in the Wachung Mountains. Guns now appear silent. A heavy black fog hanging close to the earth. Of extreme density, nature unknown. No sign of heat ray. Enemy now turns east, crossing Passaic River into the Jersey Marshes. Another straddles the Pulaski Skyway. Evident objective is New York City. They're pushing down a high-tension power station. The machines are close together now, and we're ready to head to attack. Planes circling, ready to strike. 1,000 yards and we'll be over the first. 800 yards. 600. 400. 200. There they go! The giant arm raised. Great flash! They're spraying us with flame! 2,000 feet. Engines are giving out. No chance to release bombs. Only one thing left. Drop on them, plane and all. We're diving on the first one. Now the engine's gone. 8.
This is Bayonne, New Jersey, calling Langham Field. This is Bayonne, New Jersey, calling Langham Field. Come in, please. Come in, please.
This is Langham Field. Go ahead.
8 Army bombers in engagement with enemy tripod machines over Jersey Flats. Engines incapacitated by heat ray. All crashed. 1 enemy machine destroyed. Enemy now discharging heavy black smoke in the direction of...
This is Newark, New Jersey. Warning, poisonous black smoke pouring in from Jersey marshes. Reaches South Street. Gas masks useless. Urge population to move into open spaces. Automobiles use Route 7, 23, 24. Avoid congested areas. Smoke now spreading over Raymond Boulevard.
2X2L calling CQ. 2X2L calling CQ. 2X2L calling 8X3R. Come in, please.
This is 8X3R coming back at 2X2L.
How's reception? How's reception? Kay, please. Where are you, 8X3R? What's the matter? Where are you?
I'm speaking from the roof of the Broadcasting Building, New York City. The bells you hear are ringing to warn the people to evacuate the city as the Martians approach. Estimated in these 2 hours, 3 million people have moved out along the roads to the north. Hutchinson River Parkway still kept open for motor traffic. Avoid bridges to Long Island. Hopelessly jammed. All communication with Jersey Shore closed 10 minutes ago. No more defenses. Our army wiped out. Artillery, Air Force, everything wiped out. This may be the last broadcast. We'll stay here to the end. People are holding service down below us in the cathedral. Now I look down at the harbor. All manners of boats, overloaded with fleeing population, pulling out from the docks. Streets are all jammed. Noise and crowds like New Year's Eve in the city. Wait a minute. The enemy now in sight over the Palisades. 5 great machines. First one is crossing the river. I can see it from here, wading the Hudson like a man wading a brook. A bulletin handed me. Martian cylinders are falling all over the country. One outside Buffalo, one in Chicago, St. Louis. Seem to be time and spaced. Now the first machine reaches the shore. He stands watching, looking over the city. His steel, calloused head, even with the skyscrapers. He waits for the others. They rise like a line of new towers in the city's west side. Now they're lifting their metal hands. This is the end now. Smoke comes out, black smoke, drifting over the city. People in the streets see it now. They're running towards East River, thousands of them, dropping like rats. Now the smoke's spreading faster. It's reached Times Square. People are trying to run away from it, but there's no use. They're falling like flies. Now the smoke's crossing 6th Avenue, 5th Avenue, 100 yards away, 50 feet.
2X2L calling CQ. 2X2L calling CQ. 2X2L calling CQ, New York. Isn't there anyone on the air? Isn't there anyone? 2X2L.
And there it is, that sequence from The War of the Worlds. Right before then there was a station break and a kind of an admission that it was a radio play, even in the original. And yet that fascinating story of people who believed it and were panicking during that. I assume, Millie, you've thought a little bit about that too, of how real this might have felt to them, mm-hmm. right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That I read that middle break wasn't actually planned, and while they were in the middle of recording, some people came in and were like, "Hey, you have to tell the people that this is fiction. You have to have a break right here. People are freaking out." And then there was going to be a scheduled break anyway, but that's why they put in that it was all fiction, because people tuned in later and didn't hear that first part. So.
Yeah. Well, it is something we in radio, I guess, maybe are a little overly proud of. Is no, it's truly how real anything anybody hears. I can say almost anything, and it will come off as believable because people are just used to that.
Mm-hmm.
It's an amazing medium that way.
That sense of like authority and comfort. Mm-hmm. Yeah, just this is happening in Orson Welles in. Any like genre, whether like or you know, theater or film or radio, he's just a master storyteller, and I think he was very very proud of the fact that people took it a little too far. And, you know, it was like, oh, I'm so sorry, but also, yeah, that's what I meant to do.
Well, speaking of Orson Welles, Millie Payne, you were saying that you were. Pretty fascinated with the character of Orson Welles, even as you got into this. Tell us a little bit more about how you feel about Orson Welles, what kind of a creative artist he was.
I mean, it's interesting. I mean, everything's interesting. I'm a very curious person, I think. I really like seeing how, like, all the different mediums he used create different sort of stories, and how he really stretched the boundaries of what people were expecting. Just all sorts of different things that you look at now, and it still holds up. I think you said earlier, stories like these are timeless. War of the Worlds, specifically the radio version, provides a really interesting look into the past and the future at the same time, kind of, I think, because alien spaceships definitely weren't around, nor alien invasions or anything like that. Who knows if that's a thing of the future? But you get to see sort of how people would react, and the way they react in this script is, I think, the way they would react now, even all these years later. There's some pretty classic quotes just about the life of humanity in here, and I think it's really really neat how Orson Welles captures that feeling.
Yeah, and Amelia Payne, or Millie Payne, who gets to be Orson Welles in this production, which, by the way, will be a week from Halloween. It will be Thursday, November 7th at 5 o'clock on the main stage at Civic Theater. And so, go ahead and become Orson Welles, because after the scene that we just heard, and the big freak out, and the Martians taking over, and the military powerless, and the people dying like rats, as it said, then the voice of Orson Welles came on.
As I set down these notes on paper, I'm obsessed by the thought that I may be the last living person on Earth. I've been hiding in this empty house near Grover's Mill, a small island of daylight cut off by the black smoke from the rest of the world. All that happened before the arrival of these monstrous creatures in the world now seems part of another life, a life that has no continuity with the present furtive existence of the lonely derelict who pencils these words on the back of some astronomical notes bearing the signature of Rachel Pearson. I look down at my blackened hands, my torn shoes, my tattered clothes, and I try to connect them with a professor who lives at Princeton and who, on the night of October 20th, glimpsed through her telescope an orange splash of light on a distant planet. My family, my colleagues, my students, my books, my observatory, my world, where are they? Did they ever exist? Am I Rachel Pearson? What day is it? Do days exist without calendars? Does time pass when there are no human hands left to wind the clocks? In writing down my daily life, I tell myself that I shall preserve human history between the dark covers of this little book that was meant to record the movements of the stars. But to write, I must live. And to live, I must eat. I find moldy bread in the kitchen and an orange not too spoiled to swallow. I keep watch at the window. From time to time, I catch sight of a Martian above the black smoke. The smoke still holds the house in its black coil, but at length there is a hissing sound, and I suddenly see a Martian mounted on his machine, spraying the air with a jet of steam, as if to dissipate the smoke. I watch in a corner as his huge metal legs nearly brush against the house. Exhausted by terror, I fall asleep. It's morning. Sun streams in the window. The black cloud of gas is lifted, and the scorched meadows to the north look as though a black snowstorm has passed over them. I venture from the house. I make my way to a road. No traffic. Here and there a wrecked car, baggage overturned, a blackened skeleton. I push on north. For some reason, I feel safer trailing these monsters than running away from them, and I keep a careful watch. I have seen the Martians feed. Should one of their machines appear over the tops of trees, I am ready to fling myself flat on the earth. I come to a chestnut tree. October, chestnuts are ripe. I fill my pockets. I must keep alive. 2 days I wander in a vague northerly direction through a desolate world. Finally, I notice a living creature, a small red squirrel in a beech tree. I stare at him and wonder. He stares back at me. I believe at that moment the animal and I share the same emotion, the joy of finding another living being. I push on north. Next day, I came to a city vaguely familiar in its contours, yet its buildings strangely dwarfed and leveled off as if a giant had sliced off its highest towers with a capricious sweep of his hand. I reached the outskirts. I found Newark, undemolished, but humbled by some whim of the advancing Martians. Presently, with an odd feeling of being watched, I caught sight of something crouching in a doorway. I made a step towards it, and it rose up and became a man armed with a large knife.
And that's right, where we'll suspend it, when the character, as our as Orson Welles, or as the storyteller, as the person delivering this story, and in this case brought to us by Amelia Payne, tells that really intense story. Great words to be able to deliver, aren't they, Millie?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, a lot of fun.
I like them.
That's the radio play, The War of the Worlds, which will be a week after Halloween at 7 o'clock on... not at 7 o'clock, on November 7th at 5 o'clock,
yes.
On the main stage, which is exactly when that class meets. And so mm-hmm. the radio theater production class at Spokane Civic Theater. So, Kearney, great project. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Yeah. And thank you, Millie. Well, pleasure
you.
To spend time with you. So that will be a week from now. We're in perpetual Halloween. As far as any of us know, it's just nothing but Halloween. A week from Halloween.